And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Dr. Andrew Wakefield with us as we talk about his film 1986, The Act. We're going to take your calls this hour on Coast to Coast. Andrew, would you do it all over again? I mean, from the beginning, when you came out against MMR, would you do it all over again? Any regrets?
Yeah, I get asked this question a lot, George. The answer is absolutely. I came to a crossroads in my career. I either worked for the pharmaceutical companies and public health, or I worked for the child sitting across the desk from me, and I made that choice. You know, new discoveries,
that's
new
right,
innovations in science aren't popular, and it's a part of a long history of the attacks on new ideas. I would do it all over again.
What's in 1986 that could shock us? What do you think?
Oh, the most shocking thing, and for me, I thought I knew all about this act, and I did not. And when I interviewed a lawyer who had discovery documents which had never seen the light of day, never come before a jury, because the pharmaceutical companies would settle on the court steps because they could not face going before a jury because it would have bankrupted them, it would have exposed what they'd done. When I got those documents, that really became the substance of the movie. It reveals to the world the lengths they will go to protect their profits over people, their profits over safety. And that, to me, was absolutely shocking. So documents that have never seen the light of day before revealed in the film.
Did it bother you over the years, Andrew, that you had to defend your reputation against those who are for big pharma, for vaccines?
You know, it for a time it was difficult when everything was being taken away, the degrees, the titles, everything else was going. But, you know, it came to the point where I realized that it wasn't about me at all. It was about something far more important. And beyond that point, it was easy. It took a great weight off my shoulders. And now I'm a filmmaker, which I love doing.
And you do it well.
You're very kind. Thank
and
you.
And you do it well. Was there one organization, one company, one individual who set out to get you, that tried to destroy you, and you fought back?
You often don't know these things. It's evident that GlaxoSmithKline, along with Rupert Murdoch, were first and foremost amongst the people who wanted to see an end to this. But the British government were also very much involved. So who specifically was responsible, it's difficult to say.
What do you think of this Dr. Anthony Fauci person who heads up our infectious disease unit?
Well, all I can say, George, is that during his tenure in charge of the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease, we've seen an epidemic rise in allergic and immune diseases, particularly in children, asthma, eczema, hay fever, neurodevelopmental disorders associated with immune problems, inflammatory bowel disease. So if he were in a business, he'd have been sacked many, many years ago. It's astonishing that he can keep that position when his tenure has been such an abject failure.
Let's go to Carol in Kentucky to get things started. Go ahead, Carol. Thanks for calling.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hey, yes, did I hear it correctly last week from maybe the CDC that they said one way that this can be transmitted is through tears? The evaporation of your tears.
They had said that.
And other than avoidance and just being isolated, how can we avoid that? And we're not addressing that simply with masks then. If people wonder why this is being spread so much, that's all I...
All right. Well, it's an interesting comment. This COVID-19 seems to get through any way it wants, Andrew. Somebody was wearing a mask this weekend that said, George, I want to show you something. And I said, all right, sure. He lit a match and blew it out through his mask. And he said, look, if this thing's airborne, it still gets through masks. So what do we do about that?
Yes, I think the virus is going to spread. That's what viruses do. And you say this is airborne. It's being spread by a number of different mechanisms. I don't think we're going to avoid that other than by, you know, locking ourselves down for a very, very long time. And masks are not working. There's no science to say that masks work. So I think we have to make a judgment call about whether the cure is worse than the cause. And that is my opinion. It is.
What do you think would have happened had they said no shutdown, everything runs at normal. God forbid if people get sick and they get die and they die, as they do with the flu. But we're just going to keep things running the way we are, the economy running, people working and everything. What do you think would have happened?
Well, I think we would have had a more pronounced epidemic. There would have been a more pronounced peak in deaths, particularly in elder people. And I think that it would have burnt out much more rapidly. That's the way in which natural viral infections affect the human system. And there is no right answer to any of this. This is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a global pandemic, and it has to be looked at in the context of other infectious diseases and what their natural history is.
I mean, now it just seems to be so drawn out. I mean, they're making people here in California, where I am right now, they're shutting down restaurants and bars and things again, but they've been compelling us to wear masks for some time, yet the numbers continue to go up.
Yes, I don't think the efforts to contain it have been effective, because that's the nature of viruses, that they will spread, and they've spread long before you instituted the measures to contain them. And I think this needs to burn itself out naturally. They talk about second waves, new viruses appearing. Let's see. But I think one of the problems in terms of numbers, and I trust none of the numbers at all.
Nor do I.
Is that we're seeing that they're calling a case. A case is a sick person in medicine. And what we're seeing is them calling people who test positive a case. They're not cases. They're not sick. They're people who have the virus or have immunity to the virus. And what's happening in the face of that is that mortality is still going down and down and down. So what that means is that the overall severity of the disease is far less than we originally anticipated.
Let's go next to Ed in Sierra Madre, California. Ed, welcome to the program, sir.
Thank you, gentlemen. I'm hoping the doctor can shift a little bit from the troika of children, vaccination, and autism to my end of the demographic spectrum, which is over 80, waiting for a vaccine to be developed. This time I'll have a choice. As a child, I didn't, but I probably went through all the MMRs.
Sure,
and
like we
remember
all
did. All kinds of things in my arm.
Would you get the COVID-19 vaccine if it comes out in a month or so? Ed?
I'm sorry, say again?
Would you take the vaccine for the COVID-19 if it comes out?
Well, I'd certainly need the information to make a choice. That's kind of why I'm calling, to see if the doctor has anything to advise with respect to making such a choice.
You're absolutely right. This is what it's about. It's about informed choice. And the whole purpose of this film is to demonstrate how a mother gets to that point of informed choice. She goes on her own research journey, and I think, you know, that you could make a very good case for not vaccinating or vaccinating. It's up to the individual, and it must always be up to the individual, and this is the key. And people need to be given fully informed consent.
Well, what do people do, though, Andrew, who are basically novices in the medical field? What does the average person do to decide, to ascertain whether to get the vaccine or not, when we're getting misinformation right now about this coronavirus? How do they even come up with the rationale to take it or not to take it?
And this is the real dilemma, George, is that people are getting misinformation. People are not being told the risks. They're being the benefits are being oversold. The promises of lifelong immunity and protection are being oversold. People are not being told the truth. And this will be the same, I've no doubt, for the coronavirus as much as it is for every other vaccine. So informed consent. We live in an imperfect world, and in the end, we have to make a judgment call, but it must be down to us to make that judgment call, because we are the ones who have to deal with the consequences, should there be any. So we're all in the same position. We all don't know, but we have to insist that, one, this is not mandatory. Where there is risk, there must be choice. There is no place for a forced medical procedure, and we need to have as much information as possible. Now, when you circumvent safety studies, as is the intention, as is the practice with these current COVID vaccines, so that people do not have the full picture when they are presented with the option of having the vaccine, then that is a very dangerous place to be.
I was in the military for 9 years in the Navy, and every year they go through your medical records, and they went, oh, well, you're missing a cholera shot, George, so you need to go and get this done. So I went and got my cholera shot. And I got to tell you, Doc, the next day, I couldn't even lift my arm. It was that swollen and sore. What would have caused that?
I don't know. Must have been. It may well have been a bad batch of the vaccine, a contaminant, or just a reaction to the vaccine itself. But
and that was a proven vaccine.
Yeah, well, cholera has been subjected to very few trials, and I don't think it's, I think it's, you know, rarely used now, a cholera vaccine, and there'll be good, very good reasons for that. So, yeah, I think the military are at particular risk because they are just lined up. They're given whatever. Many of them are never told what they've got. They get anthrax, smallpox, and they get it all at once. And we wonder why we have a military that is ailing so badly. You know, even if they don't deploy to the battlefront, they get what was ascribed originally as Gulf War syndrome. It wasn't Gulf War syndrome. It was a vaccine reaction.
Let's go to Michael in Arizona, west of the Rockies. Michael, thank you for calling, sir. Go ahead.
Hello, Mr. George Norrie, Mr. Wakefield, Dr. Wakefield.
Hi there.
When I call in, because you know, have you noticed, George, that the last 3 months, 3.5 months, I haven't seen any contrails. I know something, they just disappeared. I've been watching them for years. They light up the sky, you know, and they spread all day long.
Well, you're right. They're not flying as much, but you're right. They're not spraying us either.
Yes, and you had a guest on your program, you know, about the flu shot. You know, and they said not to take the flu shot because the first two were decoys, and the third one was supposed to actually kill you and do you in. I remember you remember that program that you had.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I feel like, you know, I've been watching our government since Waco, the Oklahoma bombing, and the 9/11. I got the statistics on it, and I got it all down. I feel like government's doing this to us. I feel like they're spraying, giving us respiratory diseases of some sort. You know, and because right now I just don't see no contrails at all. And, you know, I've seen jets flying over and have an airstream, you know, contrail, and it disappears in with 5 minutes. And I haven't seen anything. I feel like they stopped spraying us because they don't want to get exposed.
Well, I got to tell you, Michael, I don't think our government directly did this coronavirus, but I'm sure they were aware that there was research being done with coronavirus. First of all, coronaviruses have been around, Doc, for how many years? They've been around for a long time, haven't they?
Yeah, these are common cold viruses that have been around for a very, very long time, as long as man's been around.
Absolutely. And didn't we give $3.7 million to that Wuhan lab to play around with coronaviruses? That's what I hear.
That was an astonishing thing, and that needs to be investigated, that, you know, the National Institutes of Health were prevented from doing this kind of research under the Obama administration because there was a protest from scientists saying, this is crazy, you do not know what you're doing, you do not know what the consequences of this will be. So it was outlawed, and apparently it was shipped offshore to Wuhan. And if that's true, that seems to me to be a treasonable offense.
Well, to a Chinese communist government.
Yes, absolutely.
Jeez. Cornelius is with us.
Are disastrous.
Let's go to Louisiana. Hello there, Cornelius. Thanks for calling.
Hey there, George and Dr. Wakefield. Dr. Wakefield, I come from this, and George knows this, from a military police background, that I was at the Kim School at Anniston, Alabama, at Fort McClellan, and we studied NBC, which is nuclear, biological, and chemical. And essentially, I believe, just like George, that this is a bioweapon that they made in the lab. Now, Dr. Fauci, I call him Dr. Falseface, gave him that money you were talking about, George, to experiment with all this stuff. And I just think the Chinese just did this to destroy the economy so they can get ready for the new world government. My question for you, doctor, is this, and I'm a Christian, George knows that too. And George, they made in Louisiana, our governor is making us wear masks. So when you're talking last week with the Bible prophecy man saying, mark of the beast will be the mask of the beast. We got it here in Louisiana. I see y'all are under lockdown.
Yep.
But my question for you, being just like you were talking about the military, happened to take it, and prisoners usually they experiment these vaccines on prisoners and military people because they don't have any choices in the matter. And I want, if this is possibly the mark of the beast, and will they use nanotechnology? I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you, George.
I don't know how spiritual you are, Dr. Wakefield, or religious, but the Book of Revelation, it may have a lot to do with this.
No, I didn't know that. That story that he just told, I wasn't aware of that. So thank you for that information.
Have you realized at this point what has happened to discussion? I mean, years ago you could say, you know, I'm for this, I'm against this with somebody, and people would reasonably talk things out. Now, if you're pro-vaccine or you're against vaccine and you two communicate, people are arguing and shouting and screaming. What happened to dialogue? It's gone. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. This is interestingly, this goes back a ways, but it used to be that you couldn't, as a pharmaceutical company, advertise directly to consumers on television or in mainstream media. And then the FDA waived that rule, and so we gave drug companies the opportunity to directly communicate with the public on the nightly news, for example. What that meant is that the industry now is the major provider of sponsorship for advertising segments on the nightly news. So the industry, the media in this country, has become beholden to the pharmaceutical industry for its income. And what that did is give them enormous power. They could control the narrative. They could control the headlines. They could exclude anything that was critical of their companies. And so that reduced the dialogue. Then social media came along, and they're doing exactly the same thing with social media. So our side of the debate, the people who are vaccine aware, vaccine cautious, pro-safety, are finding themselves increasingly censored on every major platform. And our film has been censored. Our film Vaxxed, as you know, was taken off Amazon. It was taken off many of the conventional systems. And
after being on for a long time, right?
Exactly, and making them a lot of money. But it was against the preferred narrative, and so it had to be censored. So a remarkable situation that in a country with a First Amendment.
Some group, some company complained. That's probably what happened.
Yes. That's exactly what happened, and that company had a lot of money to spend.
Let's go to Brooke in Sacramento. Welcome to the program. Hi, Brooke. Good to have you with us. Well, I tell you what, I'm gonna get you when we come back from the break. We really buzzed through this half hour, didn't we? Wow. Stay with us. Dr. Andrew Wakefield with us. His latest film is called 1986, The Act. His other film is called Vaxxed. From the cover-up to catastrophe, websites are all linked up at coasttocoastam.com. As far as we're concerned, don't forget to subscribe to our free YouTube channel by going to YouTube. In the search bar, you put Coast to Coast AM Official. It pops up, and then there's a little section there that says subscribe. You just click that, and you're in. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Our final segment with Dr. Andrew Wakefield as we're talking about his latest film called The 1986, The Act. Was that act a surprise, Andrew? Were people shocked when this thing was enacted?
Well, in fact, at the time, the parents who'd been fighting in state and federal court for 6 years to get compensation for their children was sort of average in cases, were delighted that there was a compensation program that was going to be swift, non-adversarial, was going to be generous, was going to err on the side of compensating children who'd been damaged. They were all in favor of it, as were the lawyers who had been involved in that system because they'd witnessed the suffering of parents and the hostility of the defense attorneys in court against the parents. So Congress had an intention when the act was put on the statute to make a compensation program that worked. But the problem is that the federal agencies like the CDC did not want it to work because every time a child was compensated, then vaccines can do that. It made vaccine injury visible and real. And they did not want the public to know that. And so What happened was they sabotaged it. They sabotaged the things that Congress had put in place to protect children, the checks and balances, and they denied children compensation. So it turned into a disaster. But at the time, there was support from parents, some of the lawyers involved in it, and the industry, of course, because it gave them liability protection.
Let's go to Rachel in Mesa, Arizona, first-time caller. Hi, Rachel. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Dr. Andrew. Great show. First, I want to say I'm in Arizona. The mortality rate is 0.18%. Governor Ducey today got busted on Arizona Central News for being at a party on the 8th of July. No mask, no social distancing, and you can see the photos. So I think this is all a scam, really. I'm 70 years old, 45 years. I've never had a cold or a flu. I don't take any medications. I take vitamins, minerals, and supplements. Number two, Bill Gates experimented on 490,000 children in India with his vaccines, damaged them, and the Indian government kicked him out. So you can investigate that and find out the truth. He also went to North Africa. He experimented on infertility vaccines with women, and he went to Guatemala and Mexico and did the same thing. You can go to the White House and see the petition against Bill Gates for crimes against humanity for him and his wife. And Dr. Fauci, a friend of mine, traveled 128 countries. And in the 1950s, Dr. Fauci was a sworn communist. I think all this is political. I went to my doctor last year, and she says, oh, can we give you a vaccine for the flu and for the shingles and for the pneumonia? And I said, look, doctor, let's settle this. What's in the vaccines? And she says, I don't know. I says, okay, there's your answer. I don't take vaccines unless you can tell me what's in.
Well, that's a smart point. I don't think that this is a spoof, but what I do believe has happened as people in groups have taken advantage of a bad situation and have made it worse. What do you think, Doctor?
I think that's absolutely right. I think that whatever the origins of this, it's been exploited unmercifully in order to push the
everybody's agenda.
Left agenda to, and the people, of course, and the economy have suffered terribly.
How long can people last mentally before they say enough is enough?
Well, I think we all have a breaking point, and for some of us, we've reached it already, and for some of us, we can last a bit longer, but it's going to take such a toll, and the toll will go on for many, many years for our,
I think so,
for our children and our children's children.
East of the Rockies, Jersey Doug's with us in New Jersey. Hey, Doug, go ahead.
Yes, good evening. Thank you for taking my call, George.
You're welcome, Doug.
Well, once again, thank you for the doctor. Before I get to him, I wanted to mention to you earlier, you were mentioning about all of the different shots that they're giving out for the flu and virus and how you always turned it down. My mother, God bless her, she's 83 years old. Right before this pandemic went, she went for her annual checkup, and while she was waiting, the receptionist, you know, she walked over and signed her name, and the receptionist said, will you be getting a flu shot today? And she says, I'm just here for my checkup. She says, oh, okay, well, all the senior citizens are getting a flu shot, and you can make mention of it to the doctor while you're in there. And she says, okay. So after her checkup, she had mentioned to the doctor, she says, your receptionist mentioned about the flu shot. And she said, do you think I should get one? And she said, well, I'm not telling you to or not to. He says, but I don't take it. Neither does anybody in my family. And she said, okay.
Honest doctor.
Right. She said, thank you. I'll do without it. And what I also wanted to say to your guest is I'm in my late 50s. I'm one of them guys who up in their left-hand shoulder there, they've got that great big, looks like a cigar mark, cigar burn from, you know, all the vaccinations as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And what he was saying about all of them being taken at the same time, I really believe in that, because I think that there is, you know, when these chemicals get together, there's free radicals in your body, and you don't know what's going to attach to what to turn it into something else or even mutate with the other ones you're putting in at the same time. So that's, you know, that's
okay.
That's,
interesting take. And Doc, why is it that? And I would agree with you that the combination of the MMR could possibly be the cause of autism, but not every kid gets autism when they get that shot. How come?
Well, this is a fascinating question. We asked ourselves this back in the late 1990s, and we came up to the conclusion that it may well be related to age of exposure. One of the factors may be age of exposure. The younger you get the vaccine, the greater the risk. So a child getting it at 12 months may be at much greater risk than a child getting it later in life. And that may be one of the distinguishing features between those who get it and those who don't. Now, that's what the CDC studied. I told them, I shared that idea with them. They went and studied that, and they found that it was exactly true. And that is the study that they manipulated, that they distorted, and for which they destroyed the documents that revealed that effect. And that was the basis of the film Vax. So one of the answers, George, is, I believe, is age of exposure. And in the latest study by Brian Hooker, which was a comparison of health outcomes in vaccinated and unvaccinated children, younger age of vaccination was a risk for a host of adverse outcomes, including asthma, developmental delays, gastrointestinal problems, etc. So this age of exposure effect seems to be a major factor.
Let's go to Brooke, as promised, in Sacramento, California. Hello, Brooke.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Glad to be on with you, gentlemen. I want to revisit this airborne issue.
Sure.
During the pandemic of 1918, I believe it was, my grandfather was a medical doctor. And he was a very excellent, prominent doctor. One of his patients was one of the Bowery Boys, the actor there. And he knew President Reagan. But he would go into these rural areas where there was absolutely no contact with anyone, and they hadn't been out in, you know, in the public or any stores or anything. They were self-contained, and they were getting the pandemic. And the only thing really you could conclude is it was airborne. And I had a question in another area about pet vaccines. Doctor, are you familiar with, you know, pets getting sick with, you know, getting regular vaccines? Because a friend of mine had gotten a cat from a, you know, from some town. And they were compelling her to get these vaccines, and she read up on it and determined it was dangerous and did not want to give her pets the vaccine. So
yes,
there's
indeed.
My comment.
Yes, this is my colleagues in veterinary medicine have said exactly the same thing. They're seeing a host of immunological diseases in domestic animals, dogs, cats, including things like colitis and arthritis, which...
And much more than before.
...in humans. And what's interesting, and we talked about the mercury preservative in vaccines earlier, is the veterinarians were onto this much sooner than the medical doctors, and they banned mercury from pet vaccines, I think at least a decade before the medical doctors got onto it and recommended its removal. So, yes, the answer is the problems are very similar.
Let's go to John in Ohio. Thanks for holding, John. Go ahead.
Yes, I was very interested in the doctor's talk about how much of the powerful lobbies, the drug company lobbies, and I would also say the military-industrial complex is intent on pushing these vaccines on people, and as well as the rich people, like the richest man in the world, Bill Gates. This is all covered in the grayzone.com and the globalresearch.ca, bringing out how, in many cases, people like Bill Gates has been giving much of the, buying up much of the Congress and the Senate and the media by giving millions of dollars to NPR, PBS, and many of the mainstream media. So when we say, do your own research, we're not going to hear anything except the propaganda of these powerful lobbies unless we go to the hidden and often censored sites like thegrayzone.com.
Or don't forget our show. You'll get that show once in a while, for sure. But a lot of people don't trust Bill Gates. I should try to get him on the program, Andrew. What do you think?
I would definitely get him on the program. I'd love to debate him. He has a lot to answer for, a lot of questions need.
He seems like a nice guy. Am I right?
Well, that's often the way, isn't it?
You know, seems.
Fauci may be a very loving grandfather, but no, there's another side to this issue.
Is it a money motivator for him, do you think?
I don't know. I simply don't know, but I'd love to hear him answer that question. I think he's become, the power is very, very seductive, and he can control a huge swathe of the population. It's very dangerous. It's very, very dangerous when someone who is wholly unqualified for the job is suddenly calling the shots on global health policy.
When you have that much money, you can call those shots, I guess.
Yes.
Let's go to Julia first in Ohio, Orange, California. Julia, welcome to the program. Good to have you with us.
Hi.
Hi.
I was kind of interested in the fact that the only way that we can return back to our regular lives is if we get the death rate down. We can deal with all the other details later, but as long as we drop that death rate down, and stop the ICU patients aspect. And the only place I see that they're talking about that is on COVID-19criticalcare.com, where our top critical care specialist, who spoke in front of the United States Senate, stated back in April they had been practicing a protocol called MAP Plus protocol and that they had had success. So they spoke about it in May 6th. Dr. Paul Merrick, who's out of Norfolk, Virginia, who in 2016 made a solution for sepsis in a protocol, a $40 protocol that can be applied worldwide with great economics and great ease, a cocktail, and no one's practicing it. No hospitals, no doctors, just solely these eight doctors that have, that are part of this group are practicing it. Now, Dr. Verone in Houston has had 100% success rate, yet no hospitals even understand or know the name. Does he know? Do you know who Dr. Paul Merrick is out of Norfolk, Virginia?
Ever hear of him, Andrew?
No, I haven't. But I think you're absolutely right. And this kind of treatment, which doesn't cost very much and is very effective, is being denied to people because it runs contrary to the agenda of the major pharmaceutical companies, and that's not, and they don't want it.
Julia, send me some information on this doctor at george@coasttocoastam.com, if you would, and I'll send it to our producers, and we'll do a little investigating and maybe get him on as a guest. Just about a minute left, Andrew. I'd like for you to tell folks how they can watch 1986.
Please go to 1986theact.com, stream the film. It is so important. Please get it to your friends, your colleagues, your family. Have group showings, sit down, watch this film, and then take action. And in the end, if you're a single-issue voter, then you need to vote on this, because by 2032, one in two children in this country will have autism or an autism spectrum disorder, and that is based on the CDC's own data. No economy in the world is sustainable in those circumstances. So we have to act now. And you need to protect your children, your grandchildren, and yourselves by getting informed. Watch this film, and you will be so much better informed to make the right decision.
Andrew, stay safe, my friend. Dr. Andrew Wakefield. Up next, we're talking angels on Coast to Coast AM.